Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome, my friends, to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf. We're just switching it up a little bit this week. We'll still be here Saturday at 11 in the morning, but we're here today, tonight, on Wednesday, September 22nd. And I want to thank you, as always, for joining us. It's just such a blessing to have you here with us. For those who are tuning in for the first time, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I encourage you not to let another day pass before you pick up a copy of Long Walk Up. Long Walk Up is a powerfully moving and inspirational book that you need to add to your book collection. You can pick up a copy of Long Walk Up today by visiting www.chistell.com. You can also pick up a copy of Long Walk Up at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Walmart, etc., etc. If you don't see it on the shelf, just ask the book clerk for it because it's carried by the largest book distributors in the world. And now, what I'm so excited about, let us go and meet our very special off-the-shelf guest. Our special guest today is a book author, editor, and poet. She is a native of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. She attended Akron University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania's neighbor state, Ohio, where I was born. She is a wife, a mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother. She is the author of the book Small Change, Daddy Was a Bad Boy, Francis Not the Saint, Gathering Graces, Hearts on the Mend, The Sands of Rhyme, and The Adventures of Flossie, Robbie, and Junie. We are delighted to have her here with us this evening on Off the Shelf. Welcome to Off the Shelf to Floriana Hall. Welcome, Floriana.
Thank you, Denise. It's a pleasure.
I'm so happy to have you here with us, and thank you for your graciousness when I had to reschedule due to the fact that I thought I was going to be moving this month, but actually going to be moving the first weekend in October, so I thank you for that. I am doing the research for this interview. Oh, my goodness. Your life story, what a story, let alone the books that you have written, which I know your life story is weaved into the books that you have written. You have such a fascinating life story, and I trust that you have blessed countless of our listeners and readers of your books as they get to know you better through this interview and through the stories that you write. I know my paternal grandmother, when she was in her 70s, I remember her telling me how she wanted to go back to college and become a teacher, but she let someone talk her out of that. And it's so encouraging and inspiring and motivating to see you continuing to move forward with your dreams. That's one of the first things that struck me as I was doing this interview, that you continue to move forward to realize your dreams. You are truly an inspiration. I wanted to ask you, when you were a child, were you a child, or were you fully a grown woman when you realized, Floriana, that you wanted to write books?
As a child, I wrote some poetry. I really didn't know for sure what I wanted to be for a while. I thought I wanted to be a nun. I had three great aunts that were nuns, and a cousin that was a nun. And I did. What?
I said, oh, my goodness.
Yes. And I was taught in the eighth grade by my one aunt, Sister Floriana. By the way, that's where I got my name.
Okay.
I, at that time, thought, well, you know, I kind of admired some of the nuns. I had some that were really good to me. And my aunt was good to me, but she more or less expected me to be perfect.
Okay.
So, and nobody is perfect except God.
Right.
And I would see her hitting the boys that were acting up on the knuckles with a ruler, and somehow I lost my enthusiasm for becoming a nun. And I decided maybe I should, just get married and have a family. I always thought that might be the thing to do, you know, and I did it.
How did you go from there to becoming a writer? Was there a certain event that happened in your life, an experience you had that you decided, you know what, I want to sit down and write a book?
Not exactly, but the inspiration came at church when I was 68 years old. I had already raised my children and helped with some of the grandchildren, and I was looking for a way to help better the world by having walked here. And at first, I couldn't think of, you know, what should I do? I'm not too good at the nursing business. I mean, I'm rather finicky. And I thought, it will come to me. In my life, I've always felt that the gods, the angels are with me, and I will know what to do. A couple weeks later, I was in church, and the minister, the pastor, was talking about three of the parishioners who had passed away that month, and I happened to know them. And the poem, Love Never Dies, literally popped into my head. And that had never really happened before. I mean, I had written poetry as a child and during high school and written for the high school newspaper, but I never had anything that I could say was inspired. It took some work, you know. And I came home from church that day, and I sat down, and I wrote the whole poem out, and I never entered a contest with a poem before, and I saw that the National Library of Poetry was having a contest. And so I thought, well, I may as well send it in. It just seems strange that it just popped into my head. And it won the Editor's Choice Award.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, and that started me on the poetry. And I started waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning with these poems in my head all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I believe in God and the angels, and they say the angels come at 5 o'clock in the morning. And I still, to this day, will wake up some mornings at 5 o'clock, and I'll have either a thought, a story, or a poem in my head. And I have to get up right away and go to the computer and type it up, or I might forget it. And that's what I do.
You know, that's so important what you said. As soon as it comes to you, you will put it down or something, you act on, because I've had inspiration come to me as well, and I've learned over the years, whether it's with writing or some other decision that, you know, you should make, if you don't do it and you don't act on it right away, you can either delay a blessing or something, or you'll never know what would have come of it because you never acted on it. So you'll never know what could have come of it. I'm one, when inspiration comes, to get up and write a note or something down so that it stays with me, so you don't spend the whole rest of the day going, now, what was that?
That's true.
When you attended Akron University, did you major in English or communication? I heard you say that you wrote for the school newspaper and when you were in school. But a lot of times we don't make the connection between something that may be a bigger thing we do in our life when we first start out doing it. I was just curious, did you major in communications when you attended the university?
No, I took a business course because when I graduated from high school, I was the top student, especially in typing and shorthand, and I was chosen from the class right in school to come and work for the General Tire and Rubber Company in Akron, Ohio. And I was the private secretary to the controller, and I made a lot of money for a 17-year-old at that time, enough to help support my family until I was married. So the business that I took the course in college, I found that it really didn't help me that much because I worked with accounting, and it really wasn't too much, you know, into that. And then I met my husband, and I was going to school at the Akron University at night, and it was a little bit dangerous at the time. And when I met my husband, he kind of talked me, well, he didn't think that was a good idea, and he didn't have a car, that I was waiting on buses at night alone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And anyhow, we went together for a year and a half, and we were married. And as I said, my main focus was raising my family, teaching them manners and morals and cleanliness and character.
Okay, okay. Can you talk to our listeners here at Off the Shelf about your book, Small Change? I love the title. Could you tell us what inspired you to write the book, and without giving it completely away, what Small Change is about?
Yes. My daughter teaches, or she taught until this year. She just retired, fifth grade. And after I had written some poetry for a year, she asked me if I thought I could write a book about my exciting life, Great Depression. And even though I hadn't really written a book before, I had dabbled a little bit in short stories, too. And I thought, well, sure, I can do it. I love challenges. And I you know, mostly try to do anything except maybe jump off a bridge or something. I do like challenges, and I thought, well, I can do that. And as I started to write it, I wrote it longhand. I didn't have a computer at the time. It just kind of flashed in front of me like a TV set, and I could just see my life right in front of me, and I wrote that book so fast, and it actually has like 100 pages. And I didn't want to make it too long because I think that students, you know, I don't like to use the word bored because I don't believe in it, but I think sometimes they would rather read a shorter book. And
right.
I included history and prices with the exciting story. And my daughter had looked for a book that was a true story and had history and prices in it, and at that time she was unable to find one. I'm sure there's some out there now, but I don't know if they're true stories. And she started, well, after I typeset it myself, actually, because I thought, my name is not known, and I thought, I better get my name known before, you know, sending out queries to publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found this printer who had a typesetting machine, said I could use it, and then he printed up the book for me, and I did five editions, and they sold.
Wow.
I mostly did the signings myself locally. And then, unfortunately, this printer passed away very young, and that is why when I was doing another, you know, edition, a small change, I decided to change the name to The Adventures of Flossie, Robbie, and Junie during the Great Depression. And the students of the fifth grade who read it, and there are many here and in Kansas because that's where my daughter lives, who have really enjoyed the story and learned to appreciate what they have after reading it. And they have all the different classes have sent me letters telling me that they learn not to take life for granted and to appreciate what they have, and that's so rewarding. And I go to
schools
and I
speak
to them.
That would touch me so deeply. Oh my goodness!
I know.
Oh,
I love these letters.
Wow.
and I go to schools and speak to them about it, and they ask me so many questions, and that's the really fun part of writing for me. I like to do that. I like to work with children.
Yeah, I think engaging with the reader myself, that is the most rewarding thing of being a writer. And I would say probably anything in life, whether you're a singer or writer or actor, is actually engaging with the other people. That's just a tool to be able to do that, but that's really where the great reward comes in. I know you had mentioned earlier that you had self-published Small Change. What was that experience like? You found a printer, and actually somebody was just going to so you could typeset the story. But what was the experience like? Was self-publishing what you thought it would be? Was it a little more laborsome than you thought? What was that experience like for you?
Well, at the time, I was a little bit younger because I'm going to be 83 now. So
oh, my goodness.
68, 69 then.
Okay.
And I, you know, just traveled around locally. I've never liked to drive very far, so I didn't, you know, locally, the signings. And I just found that people flocked to them for some reason or other, and I sold a lot of books that way. And then by word of mouth, it got around, you know, and newspaper articles. I was in the newspaper quite a bit because, actually, I'm the first author from my graduating class at Cuyahoga Falls High School, and I'm a distinguished alumni. They inducted me in the, you know, alumni that are,
congratulations.
Have done something. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That have done something worthwhile, you know, to help people. But, you know, it just, after I wrote Small Change, people started asking me, what happened after that? I wrote it through high school, and a child would not recognize that there might be something more to it, but any adult reading it might draw that conclusion. And that is what why I wrote Francis Not the Saint. At first I called it Daddy Was a Bad Boy, but that was not the name I chose. The publishers chose it, and I never liked that name. So after 7 years, the title was given back to me, the copyright for the book. And mm-hmm. I changed the name to Francis Not the Saint. And it's a little bit thicker book and has a few additions and a surprise ending to it. And
go ahead.
It sells very well. It's on, you know, Amazon and all these different places that you, many other websites that you were naming there. And it sells very well. And I've recently been asked to update the book. Publish America approached me and asked me to write a memoir again, up to date, up to the present time. And it will be called Miss Flossie's World, Coping with Adversity During the Great Depression Then and the Recession Now.
Wow. That's a question I'm going to ask you later in the interview. But so Small Change, just so our off-the-shelf listeners are clear, it talks about your childhood as your parents went through the Great Depression. Is that correct? It just takes it up through what you until you graduated from high school. It covers okay, and it looks through your eyes through the experience, not through your parents or your siblings, but just the way you perceived. Did you know at the time when your family was dealing with this? And I'm told that for some people, the Great Depression, just like the recession, was harder than it was for other people. Was that your understanding? And did you know when you were a child that there was something that had this? Was there a sudden shift? Did you notice it as a child, or did your parents try to sort of incubate you from that?
Actually, we weren't told too much, but we were told when we were old enough to understand about what started the Great Depression. And I was born in 1927, so I was quite young when it, you know, was in the worst part of it. But our father would leave us all the time, and we moved from city to city because he couldn't always find a job, but he had such a good gift to gab that he usually did find something. And we moved from school to school. My brother, my youngest brother, was in 3 first grades. I was in 3 third grades. Yes. And, we never had enough food to eat because our father would abandon us all the time. And he'd be gone for weeks.
So before this, he was home. And then suddenly this change comes about. And I guess as a child, you try to understand what is causing this change. And, of course, yes, you would have been. My grandfather lived through, I think he was about, well, my grandfather was born in 1921. He's passed on. But he said he remembers being 12 years old, going down to get the relief check. And he said he hated it. And he vowed he would never, ever, ever be on public assistance, and he never was. He said he absolutely hated going down there to get that check. Oh, my goodness. But he was actually a little older, but the stories I've heard of, it did hit everybody, was impacted, like from the recession. I think everybody's been impacted to some degree, but some people, it hit them harder than it hit other people. That was from what I've been told in some of the research that I've done. What was your family's reaction, Floriana, when they saw and held your first book? And was there anybody in your family who didn't know about your experience as a child with the Great Depression until they read your book from your family?
Hardly anybody knew about it because things were different then. Now, we moved from I was in 11 different schools, actually. We moved so often that we didn't have time to plant a garden, and we didn't know anybody who had a garden except our grandmother in Pittsburgh, but it was such a small garden. So we were without, a lot of food. We mostly had homemade bread that my mother would make, and she was such a darling person and generous. And days when we didn't have enough to eat, she would give us her share of food. And as we became older and understood more about the Great Depression, you know, we knew that our dad was looking for jobs, and he always found something. Like I said, he had a gift to gab, and by the way, he looked like Robert De Niro a lot. And,
okay. A handsome man.
Women seem to be attracted to him. So, I don't, there's a lot of other circumstances. My mother was ill for a while, and he just became a philanderer and juggled three families at once. And I didn't know about this, and mother didn't. We knew about one, but we didn't know about the third family. We were the first family. And when I was 16, we found out about that family, and it's in the book. It's a woman comes to our door and is looking for her husband by the same name of my dad.
Yes,
and she had a baby in her arms and another little girl with her. And poor mother was so shocked, and we were devastated, you know, because he was trying to. No wonder we didn't have any money or enough food.
Right,
he was
trying to take care of so many other children.
Excuse me. I'm on the phone in an interview, Bob, my husband. Sorry.
Okay.
He's sorry.
That's fine. That's fine.
Out.
That's absolutely fine.
Okay.
That's
he said that's fine.
Who is it?
It's Denise.
No, Denise, I'm sorry.
Oh, he's fine. These things happen. We have our lives to live as well. Who designed the cover of your book, Floriana, the one where the children are licking the ice cream cone? Who designed the cover? Did you or did you hire someone to do that?
That's supposed to be me. It's a friend of mine from high school actually drew these graphics. And we all have ice cream cones in our hand, which was such a treat. We hardly ever got ice cream. And I think that's why I put it on there, because I thought, well, I want the book to be a treat, so we're going to have a treat here. And the boy with the dark hair is my brother, Robbie, and the boy on the right-hand side of me is my brother, Junie. He was the youngest one, and we're all 2 years apart. And they say they don't remember.
Oh. Now, the books are, now I know that Small Change is written for like a fifth grade. Your daughter, who recently retired, encouraged you to write a book and tell your story. But are any of your books that deal with the Great Depression written for the adult audience? Are there any, you know, are they all written for basically a child?
Francis Not the Saint is definitely an adult book. And So Was Daddy Was a Bad Boy, and So Will Miss Flossie's World. It's an adult book. But people who had read The Small Changer, The Adventures, they could tell that, you know, something more was going on, and that's the reason that I wrote the whole story, and, because I couldn't put everything in the children's book.
Right.
And it's a mesmerizing story because our mother was such a wonderful person who taught us right from wrong, and our father was anything but a saint, and our mother was sometimes thought of as a saint, and that's where I got the name. His name was Francis.
Okay. Speaking of your book, and you alluded to this earlier, you said a publisher reached out to you, and they want you to write your memoirs and bring them up to date. I wanted to ask you, when you were younger and you were going through all these different experiences, particularly during the Great Depression, did you think that you would ever live through another economic experience? Of course, this is different than the Great Depression. I don't think they had a lot of the public systems that they have in place now. Then there were a lot of things, the FDIC, there are a lot of things that are now in place or that were before the recession hit that they did not have during the Great Depression. So the Great Depression just hit, very, very, a lot harder. But did you think you would ever go through something even where the banks were collapsing and lending was just there was a stranglehold put on lending and the stock market was really just going down, down, down. Did you think you'd ever live through something like that again when you were younger? Or did you think, you know, only in one lifetime could this happen?
You know, I believe that anything is possible. So nothing surprises me too much. And I never dwell on things too much. So, you know, once the Great Depression was over, World War II started shortly after that. So we also went through World War II without enough food. And so nothing surprises me.
Okay. And you know what? That every 10 or 20 years, something major generally does come along, and then after a while, you just trust God, and you, like you said, nothing surprises you, and you just keep your faith and keep moving forward. The Sands of Rhyme. Your book is a book of poetry. I wanted to ask you, if poetry, is that your first love when it comes to writing? And what is it about poetry that you like so much?
Well, I sort of have a passion for poetry. I think because it just pops in my head that I, you know, really appreciate that I feel that God is helping me, wants me to do this. And I started the Poet's Nook because I do love poetry, and I also like to write short stories. I like just writing in general, but poetry is really a way of expressing your feelings maybe a little bit more. I started this group. We have about 20 poets, and we meet once a month at the Cuggle Falls Library, which is a suburb of Akron where I live. And I have put together, 4 books for them so far, and we're working on our 5th one, and we're all excited about it. There's, as I said, 20, they're published poets, and we're looking forward to this book because it's Poems of Beautiful Ohio Then and Now. And, the first book we did was Through Our Eyes, Poems of Beautiful Northeast Ohio, and it has poems about the local area, Akron, Cuyahoga Falls, Kent, and Ravenna, and, you know, cities that are rather within a driving distance here. And we have poets that come from Streetsboro even. They travel to come to the Poet's Nook once a month, and we're all excited about the new book because we think it's going to be a good seller. The Through Our Eyes, the first book, sold really well, and the printer moved, who was printing these books for us, and he upped his price four times. It cost $400 the first printing, and by the time we wanted the fifth printing, it was $1,600,
wow.
And then he moved.
Oh, my goodness. And that was okay with you guys, I'm sure.
Yeah, so, you know, we decided to do another book and include the whole state of Ohio, and there'll be poems about the different cities in Ohio and just about Ohio in general.
Sometime tonight, and let me know how much time you would need. I would love for you to read some from this, at least one poem from The Sands of Rhyme. So you can let me know if you need like 2 or 3 minutes to prepare or how much time you need. But I would love to hear you read a poem from The Sands of Rhyme.
Okay. Well, I've got the new book, Select Sands of Rhyme and Reason, has some of the poems in. And I will read you, if you don't mind.
I would love you to.
Gentle Gestures. And I wrote this, and it just came to me. Comforting is the gentle rain, pitter-patter on the window pane, nurturing nature's gifts of sustenance, gardens, plants, and trees in abundance. Considerate is the gentle man, tender, kind, who takes your hand and lifts you up, body and soul, when circumstances exist beyond control. Sensitive is the gentle woman, understanding, attentive, softly spoken, soothing furrowed brows of mankind, manners, morals, respect, and love defined. Sweetness is the gentle child, caring, sharing all the while, obeying the Ten Commandments of God, from morning to night's refreshing nod. Placid is the gentle wind, unruffled, calm, and disciplined. Seeds of germination midst the storms. God's gifts come in many forms.
Oh my goodness, that was so touching. And wow, so when did you, thank you for reading that. It just blessed me. How many years ago did you write that poem? I know you said they just pop into your head, but how many years ago did you write that wonderful poem that you just read?
12 years ago. And then I'll read one more because I wanted to, demonstrate that I write different types of poetry.
Okay.
Okay, this one's called Expectations. There are some limitations in feelings others can convey. When we need them, sometimes they're not there. It may not mean their affection is lessened. They may not know how to reveal their tender feelings. Loosen the rope and give them some slack. Try not to be hurt by lack of attention. Give what you can give and hope it is enough to satisfy them in the good times or the bad. There may be too many eyes or wants you need for them to be at your side for every desire. Don't say my way or no way, or the love, their particular kind, could be left by the wayside, for love can be complex. That's it.
Thank you. Oh, Floriana. Thank you so much. I think when writers read their work, readers get to really appreciate the, I don't want to say the root or the essence of what the writer put into the piece itself, other than just reading it on paper. I really appreciate you reading that. Very, very touching. What is the overarching message when people read your poems, Floriana, that you want readers to gain from your works, your short stories, your books, your poems? What's the overarching message you want a reader to come away with after they read something that you've written?
Every story, every poem has a subtle message. Sometimes you don't know it until you get to the end of the poem or the story, but there's always something that I think has wisdom and through my life experiences, it will help. And that's the one of the purposes I write, too, because I want the people to know that I believe in God and that these poems and stories are inspired by God.
Okay. What are some of the effective ways, Floriana, that you said you have a poetry group that meets there in Akron, and then also you're writing a book of poetry together with these poets on the state of Ohio, which I'm delighted to hear since I'm from Ohio. But what are some of the effective ways that you found to share your poetry to get the word out about your works, other than, of course, interviews, to get the word out about your works and increase sales, and just to share what you have within you with others? What are some effective ways that you found to spread the word about your poetry?
Well, as a group, each time that we do a book, and each time I do my own books, the Cuyahoga Falls Library has been very generous, and we do a signing. And you see, each poet knows other poets. Each poet has family. And at the one signing of Voices in Verse, we sold 74 books in just an hour.
Wow, that's good. Yeah. Okay. And that the group, everybody inviting somebody out instead of one person trying to do it all by themselves.
Exactly. And then actually the Voices in Verse, I'm trying to get some more books right now. It was a hardback, and the company was having some trouble with getting them made, and so they're doing it for us in a paperback now, and I think maybe it will sell better because hardbacks cost a little bit more. But I also do separate signings, and I go to shows. I go to, craft shows sometimes. I find that I do a lot of selling that way. And word of mouth, and the books are all online, you know, and people buy the books from different websites. We did a couple of the books with cyberwit.net, which is a company in India. And their prices are really reasonable, and those books have sold real well too. So it's hard sometimes at my age to do a lot of networking. And I just had a total hip replacement, and my husband he had a stroke last year, and I've been his caretaker. He has a slight dementia, so it's a little bit extra for me to do,
right.
But somehow, the writing, I mean, I always take time to write. It's there. You know?
You are an amazing, amazing woman. Oh, my goodness. For our listeners here at Off the Shelf, we are talking to just, oh, wow. I'm so blessed with all the different guests we've had on. Yeah, I just cannot even, if I had to bundle up the guests and all the blessings I've gotten from each of them, that bag would just burst. But to our off-the-shelf listeners, we're speaking with Floriana Hall. She is a mother, a wife, a grandmother, a great-grandmother, and she's getting ready to turn 83 years old. She is a poet. She's an author, an editor, and she attended Akron University in Ohio. She's the author of the book Small Change, Daddy Was a Bad Boy, Francis Not the Saint, Gathering Graces, Hearts on the Mend, The Sands of Rhyme, which she graced us with two poems from that just a few moments ago, and The Adventures of Flossie, Robbie, and Junie, which she's Flossie, and Robbie and Junie, I think, are her brother and sister. Their experiences and hers of growing up in the Great Depression, which we touched on a little bit earlier in the interview. For those of you who just joined, once the show streams, you can always go back, excuse me, and listen to the show again so you can hear it in its entirety and you can enjoy Floriana Hall reading from her poetry. Who are some of your favorite poets, Floriana, and what is it about their work that you appreciate?
Well, I have always loved Joyce Kilmer, and Trees is my favorite poem. And I remember putting little books together in high school of my favorite poems and poets. And I always enjoyed Joyce Kilmer better and more than anyone. But I mean, I like different types of poetry. So I like Robert Louis Stevenson and you name it. I like almost all the poets. And I give a course. I teach poetry online. And each month there is an excerpt from one of the poet's lives that I choose. I just really enjoy it.
Have you always, when you look back over your life, I know you said you were asked to work for, I forget exactly who the gentleman was in Akron, that you went to school and then you went to work, you were asked to go work for somebody prominent in the city. Have you always been somebody who, whatever you wanted to do, you just went out and did it? And that's an interesting question as I asked that myself. And I was telling you about my paternal grandmother, and actually my grandmother's on both sides of my mom and my dad. Back, I was born in the 60s, and I got to tell you, I didn't grow up seeing women really take, just even when you said you were, when you went to work, that was like the oddest thing. So it sounds like you're a go-getter, because I can just tell you, even in my mother's generation, women did not do what I'm seeing you do. Have you always been that way? Did you always say, you know, I'm going to go out and get a job, I want to do this, I want to do that? To you, it probably sounds very normal, but I look back myself being a child, and I can tell you that I think what you've done is just extraordinary. But have you always, you know, been like a go-getter, or did you suddenly become this way? As you began to, you know, as you got older, have you always been this way, or did you become this way over time?
I think I was born with a smile on my face, and I have always been a person who likes to help. I love to help my mother. You know, I used to go to the grocery store when I was 9 years old when she had some money, but groceries didn't cost much then, so we always, we never starved, but mostly she made homemade bread all the time, and sometimes we only had a piece of bread three times a day. But I have always been a person who wants to help. I babysat when I was 13, and I was always looking for ways to help my mother, and because of the circumstances. And she was ill for a while, and that's part of the story too. And when she had the surgery that made her well again, she started working herself. And my brothers, I have two brothers, they started setting up pins at the bowling alley for 10 cents an hour. I babysat for a quarter an hour. I did people's housework for 50 cents all through high school and the summer. I didn't mind it. We're a generation, I think, that knew we had to do, or a family, maybe they weren't all alike, but we knew we had to do something to make ourselves, our lives better. And I think that I was just born with that in mind. I have my eldest daughter who is so much like me. She loves to help people. And when I've had my heart surgery and my hip surgery, she came and helped me, and we're going to Kansas for a week. And she said, Mom, because I'm not allowed to bend or twist or anything yet since the hip surgery. She says, I'm going to wait on you hand and foot. I said, oh, that sounds pretty good to me right now.
Oh, my goodness, Floriana. When did you write Hearts on the Mend, and what is Hearts on the Mend about? And was there an event that inspired you to write that book?
Yes. I had a quadruple heart bypass 6.5 years ago, you know, about the same time President Clinton had it. And he had to go back and have a stent. But so far, you know, I went through this latest surgery. My heart is very strong. So I'm lucky, because my mother died at 59 from a coronary occlusion. And I just think that medical science has come so far. I can read you the excerpt of the back of the book here. It is a known fact that heart disease is the number one killer of women. understanding that Floriana Hall feels that she is fortunate to be alive today, since she had no apparent symptoms. A chance remark to her family physician led to four different tests before it was found out her main artery was 100% blocked, two others 95%, and one 90%. She knew about her genetic factor, but was told that her heart was fine at every doctor's visit. Floriana experienced a quadruple heart bypass on September 4th, 2003. She felt compelled to write her bizarre story to help mankind. And for the enjoyment of everyone, the author has included other interesting stories of heart patients, men and women, in different circumstances. This book will touch all emotions and hopefully save lives.
Well, you know what, Floriana, and I thank you for sharing your story. You are, I've heard other people say when they've had a medical condition that they had not one symptom, not one. Or they went to the doctor and the doctor said, "You're fine." And then years later they found out that wasn't exactly the case. So, you know, you hear people say you got to get a second and a third opinion, and you have to take the responsibility for your health. Don't put it in a doctor's hands, you know, if you don't feel good or you just think, you know what, this runs in my family or whatever. Let me just get checked out again. I'm just so happy that you did that. I wanted to also ask you, because this is a question that, is a big question in a lot of our off-the-shelf listeners' minds week after week as they try to go out and do what you did and publish a book. I know you self-published the first book that you wrote, but by the time you found a publisher for your book, I wanted to ask you, how did you go about landing a publisher for our off-the-shelf listeners so they can know what they might be able to do so that they can go out and get a publisher for their books as well?
You know, from my own experience, and because of my age, it's hard to travel all over, and especially taking care of my husband and so forth. So it seems, and it has always seemed easier for me to get a publishing company that you can do it, all the work yourself. I love to do my own editing. I just guess I don't trust anybody else. And so I use BookSurge, and which has actually been taken over by CreateSpace right now. And I've used CyberWit in India because they have good prices. And I always end up, you know, mostly selling the books myself. I think I do it because I like to do it, you know. Not so much the promotion, but I just like the idea of doing the book myself. And I think I distrust myself more than anybody about editing and so forth. I mean, when I was in high school, I was one of the top students, and I excelled in English and literature. And I had wonderful teachers who taught me everything I needed to know about writing, actually. So the advice I would give is, you know, if you're younger, you know, age has a lot to do with this, too, because I was 68 when I started, and nobody knows how long you're going to live. But if you're younger, it's okay to send out a lot of queries to big publishers. You may have to send 75 out, though. Well, at 68 and 69, I was thinking, well, I don't know how much time I've got to do all this. So this is one of the reasons that it was more convenient for me to do it myself. Plus, like I said, I sort of trust myself. Not that I'm computer savvy, but I'm more savvy about writing, you know. Okay. I have a little problems with computers.
Okay. I want to talk about your book, Gathering Graces. I really like that title. I think it's the word grace that pulls me in. Did you pick the title? And if so, does the title Gathering Graces hold a special meaning?
Yes. I saw one of the books at church was called Gather, and a songbook. And I thought, oh, isn't that a good title? And then when I was putting together my poetry book, it just occurred to me that gathering, what are we gathering? Gathering graces. And I tried to write the poetry, you know, as inspirational as I could. I have different sections in the book. They all begin with a G. And I get these ideas, you know, and I just carry them through. It's gallery, gardens, generations, gatherings, gunfire, God, gems, and gifts, grins, and grit. And I have it separated like that. But the poems mostly are relative in each category.
Okay, okay. So gathering graces, anything that a grace that starts with a G, and in life's experiences or situations, I guess, that would fall under those categories, that's what's covered in your book. I can see now where reading your books would really motivate or inspire someone despite the life situations they're going through, because you certainly have probably seen a gamut. Your mother and the birth of a child is such a blessed event. So you've probably seen the highs, and you've also experienced some lows in life, but managed to maintain a positive outlook through it all. I wanted to ask you, are there any other creative artists, musicians, writers, painters in your family?
That's a good question. There's no other writers except my grandfather on my dad's side. He wasn't a very nice man, but he wrote for the Pittsburgh newspapers.
Oh.
And there's a lot of genes involved. And I have on my mother's side, musical talent. And it's been passed down, not to me, though. I can't sing, not at all. But my cousin, he was a professor of music at Iowa University, and he had his own band. And I think he still dabbled a little bit, although he's, you know, in his late 70s. And my granddaughter, she can play the piano by ear like my Uncle Jim did. And yes, and I noticed when she was 2 years old, her name is Shelly, she was playing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star on a toy piano. And I thought, well, for heaven's sake, I think she's got that talent. And she is a senior at Mount Union in Alliance, Ohio, and a major in music. She's going to be a music teacher. She has shows. She sings and she plays like an angel. I mean, it's just fantastic how she can play the piano. And she took singing lessons. So I believe genes have something to do with it all.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I would agree with you as well. But I don't know of any other writers in my family. There could be, but there's definitely the musical talent in my family, although I don't sing worth a lick either. But I want to ask you next, because we only have this interview has blown by. We only have about 7 minutes left. I definitely wanted to ask you, when I was doing the research for this, I was curious about it. Who's on the cover of Francis, Not the Saint? It looks like a young couple in love. Who's on the cover of that book?
That's Francis, my mother. That's my father, Francis, and my mother, Floriana, when they were courting, and they were very much in love. And for 5 years, everything was great. And then everything started to go downhill after that. And I found that picture in my album. And, of course, it's very old. And I thought, oh, wouldn't that make a good cover for the front of the book? And they were able to kind of preserve it because it was a little bit, discolored. But it looks pretty good on the cover of the book.
It does. Mm-hmm. And I was curious who the couple was. I thought it might be your parents, but I was curious, and I definitely wanted to make a note to ask you that during the interview. And Floriana, do you have a website? You just do so many wonderful things. And if you do have a website, or is there some place that our off-the-shelf listeners can go to find more about you, your books, to keep in touch with you, if you have a website or someplace online where they can reach you, could you give us that website URL or information?
Okay. I've got three of them that I can give you my email address. Okay. The first one is http:// www.alongstoryshort.net/FlorianaHall.html. I know that's long. And the poetry lessons are on www.lsswritingschool.com under You, Me, and Poetry. And I've also got another one, www.booksofexcellence.com.
Okay.
And my email is hafloria@sbcglobal.net.
Okay.
And that's
thank
how
you,
they can get in touch with me.
Thank you for that information for our listeners to go. And you can also look her up in a search engine like Google, Floriana, FLORIANA Hall. And she, again, you can put in the titles of her books, and she will come up in some of her books again, are Small Change, Gathering Graces, Hearts on the Mend, The Sands of Rhyme, which she read two wonderful poems from for our off-the-shelf listeners here tonight, and The Adventures of Flossie, Robbie, and Julie. And she's working on a new book as we speak now. Where can our off-the-shelf listeners get copies of your books, Floriana?
Well, some of them might be out of print, like Small Change, but they still have copies on Amazon.com. All the books are on Amazon.com. And sometimes people, evidently Amazon buys books from people, and you can still probably get a copy of Small Change. But the new book I have out has some of the poems called Select Sands of Rhyme and Reason, and that can be bought on cyberwit.net, too. And these are all on Amazon.com.
Okay. Are you going to be appearing at any book signings, conferences, et cetera, library events? If so, if you could just tell us about one or two. We've got 3 minutes left so our listeners can come out and support you.
Well, I will be on some more blog radio, and also I will be having book signings after these next two books are finished that I'm writing, and that will be coming up in 2011. And in between, I will be at some expositions and craft shows, and in the fall, most of this is done in the fall. In the summertime, not too much goes on, but I do most of these signings in the fall and in the spring, expositions and so forth. So I do have October, November, December, I've got three shows coming up.
Oh,
and they're
okay.
All local. They're all local, you know, around where I live. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they can to our off the shelf listeners. You can look Floriana up in the search engines, go to her website, and then you can check out events, other radio interviews that she's giving, other things that she's going to be doing on the internet, and her poetry teaching. For those of you who are interested, you can check that out online as well. We have come down to the last minute of the show. It has gone by so quickly. I want to thank Floriana Hall for taking time out of her day to be with us here on Off the Shelf this evening. What a wonderful, wonderful evening it has been. I'm sure our listeners truly enjoyed the interview, and I know that I did. Again, Floriana Hall, she is a native of Ohio and the author, a native of Pittsburgh. She went to Akron University in Ohio. She's the author of the book Small Change, Gathering Graces, Hearts on the Mend, The Sands of Rhyme, The Adventures of Flossie, Robbie, and Junie. And she's working on two new books as we speak. So go check her out online. You can get her books through Amazon.com. She has two new books coming out. Support Floriana. She is truly, truly an amazing woman. And I'm so, so grateful and blessed that our paths did cross. I want to encourage you all to please tune in this Saturday at 11 o'clock. We will be back as usual on our Saturday schedule, each Saturday at 11 in the morning. We did. Floriana just blessed us with a Wednesday show, and I'm truly grateful to her. Please go visit her online and support her, and pick up a copy also of my new book, Long Walk Up, which you can get at www.chistle.com, and that's C-H-I-S. TELL.com this Wednesday evening. I want you to remember that you're so incredibly valued, so blessed, so loved, and so wonderful. And go out and create a blessed evening for yourself this evening and a wonderful tomorrow for yourself. Floriana, thank you, thank you, thank you so much, and bless you, bless you. What a blessing you were. So I thank you for being here, and I will shoot you an email, Floriana.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.